Good morning. So glad to have you tuned in today. It's for Mornings for the Master. I'm J.J. Hendricks, and this is
Chris Groda, and we are so glad that you all have tuned in again for another Mornings for the Master Friday edition, and we've got some great wisdom. What do you always say about the Proverbs, J.J.?
That if you read them and do the opposite, you'll live a short and miserable life.
Yeah, that is really true. The Proverbs was wisdom literature for the people of the Old Testament, and by implication, it is for us today. And so many great things and concepts in the Proverbs. And today we'll be covering Proverbs chapters what?
7 and 8.
Proverbs chapters 7 and 8.
Also, want to let you know we have a special guest in studio with us, Vincent Hendricks. And glad he's with us. Hey, Vincent, say hello, okay?
Say hello. Say hi.
Hey. Hey, good. Vincent is my 2-year-old son, and he is eating lunch while we are doing our radio show. So if you hear little kid noises, it's not me or Chris. It is Vincy, and might be able to add some insight for us. But before we get into our show, we want to make our announcements. We have our upcoming Bible Bowl of Northeast Texas.
BBNet kicks off in October. October 9th will be the first meeting, and we're going to be covering 1 Corinthians 1 through 4. If you, your congregation, maybe, and you know what? The great thing about this is you don't even have to have young people.
Nope,
you can be an adult group, and in your congregation, your people can test together, and we are just more than glad to have you be with us. We just love the fellowship and love the getting together and studying God's Word together, and it's just a wonderful time of friendship renewal and togetherness in the Lord.
Right. And this year we're going over 1st and 2nd Corinthians. We have a youth division that's 1st to 12th grade, an adult division that's all ages. So come and join us if you can. It's the second Monday night of every month. And we're going to, I'm the test writer, so it's going to be exciting. And you won't like that, buddy.
I'm so glad you're the test writer.
Yeah. It's fun to write the test and try to not make any mistakes. That's my score. Everybody else is testing on the test, and I'm testing for accuracy. So
you know, I used to write that test, and I made up the new rule that whenever the judges got back there, if they ever had something where I didn't do it right or
so
something,
they could
do it
the next time.
I said, well, I was just like, you just go ahead and give it to him. You be the judge over whether or not this is right or wrong. So
I like it. Nobody's ever given me real grief about it, but it's like, you know, if you just think I'm that you could do a better job, I want you to do it. So we got another couple of kiddos that have run in here that are running back out, but we're going to be looking over Proverbs chapter 7 and Proverbs chapter 8. And we're going to see warnings against the adulteress, as well as blessings of wisdom. Is there any pre-reading comments you want to make before we jump into this?
No, I really don't have anything. I've got two commentaries out. I've got one, which is the Book of Proverbs, the 7th Annual Southwest Lectures, back when Bill Jackson was the editor. And this chapter, Furman Carpenter, has a chapter in it. I'm going to be looking at it as we go along. And then Neil Pollard has a chapter on this chapter as well in the Bristol, Virginia, the annual Bristol Gospel Journal lectures. Clifford Newell Jr. was the editor on that, and this is called Proverbs, a Handbook for Youth.
I have never heard of that lectureship,
so I don't even know if it still goes on or not, but it was a good volume. You know, in the year that I got it, and I think this book dates back to 2003. So
nice. I was in college when that came out. All right, so Proverbs chapter 7. My son, keep my words and treasure up my commandments with you. Keep my commandments and live. Keep my teaching as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you're my sister, and call insight your intimate friend. And one of the things that I like is you look at this, write them on the tablet of your heart. And my grandfather was a faithful gospel preacher and has dementia severely and doesn't remember quite a bit of the family. But the way that I got to spend time with him at the last family reunion I was at was I would start a scripture and he would finish it. So while he forgot some of us, he didn't forget the word. And that is remarkable. I believe that's what's being talked about here, is write them on the tablet of your heart. Let them become who you are. Let God's statutes be who you are. And live by those things.
So when we get in here, he's saying, my son, keep my words and treasure up my commandments with you, and keep my commandments and live, keep my teaching as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers and write them on the tables of your heart. So, you know, he's trying to really get to the heart of this individual, but the overall context is a warning against adultery. And I think it's interesting that that you know, adultery is a big common sin. Mm-hmm. I mean, it happens so much, and the Proverbs has got a lot to say about it. There's a whole chapter. Dan Bailey has a chapter in this Bristol, Virginia book on adultery in the book of Proverbs, and it's such a sad and sorrowful subject, and I think it's a frightening subject in a lot of ways. It's sad and sorrowful that so many homes are shipwrecked and destroyed by adultery. Loving and faithful ties between husbands and wives are broken in a moment by this particular heinous sin. Now, if you look at verse number 4, what does he say?
Verse number 4, say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call insight your intimate friend.
To keep you from what?
To keep you from forbidden women, from the adulteress with her smooth words.
And so this is really what all this is about. It's a warning against marital unfaithfulness. It's a warning against immorality. Solomon begins this warning in a very gentle way, as he addresses this individual who is his son. He doesn't want to start off by being stern or critical, but with a loving kindness that I think would encourage most anybody to listen.
Right. If we look at context, I mean, chapter 6 could have been roped in with chapter 7 because we see warnings against adultery, and now we see warnings against the adulteress. So we always have to be watchful to not fall into sin, to keep our mind in the right place, and that's what the proverbial writer is saying here. Say to wisdom, you're my sister. Call insight your intimate friend. And to keep you from the forbidden woman, from the adulteress. Now, it could be from the one that wants to break up a physical marriage, but if we look at it in a spiritual way, you look at the Ammonites and the Moabites, God's people were told to avoid those people at just about all costs, because what they would do is they would marry his people, and then they would pull them away to their idolatry. It happened to Solomon. Solomon was building temples for the Moabites and all of his wives, and he just kind of worshiped freely with all of those. So with this advice that we have here is don't chase forbidden women. And it can physical sense, don't chase an adulteress, but also in a spiritual sense is we don't need to be pulled away from God.
Now, in verses 6 through 9, which is a section about the simple, those are simple-minded in the topic of immorality. It says, for at the window of my house I have looked out through at my lattice. You know what lattice work is, don't
right.
you?
Right.
And I don't know about my readers. I think they probably know what that is.
Yeah.
And almost like a shade, you know.
Yeah.
And I have seen among the simple, I have perceived among the youths, a young man lacking sense. Now, when have we ever seen young men lack sense, right?
Forever and ever and
all
ever.
The time, all over, everywhere, right? In the twilight, in the evening, at the time of night and darkness. And so as the first scene begins here, this teacher describes in what somewhat graphic detail the scene which he witnessed outside his house as he looked through the lattice work of his window. The teacher says they were simple and without understanding, that they were young. And he noted one simpleton in particular, without any deliberate intention of sinning, put himself inside the periphery of temptation and taunted transgression as he went the way to her house. You'll notice that in the text. A young man lacking sense passing along the street near her corner is what the ESV says, taking the road to her house. People today are trying to minimize the possibility of sin, or the bigness of sin, the greatness of sin, and they try to get as close to temptation as they can get. Oh, I can handle it. I'm a big boy. I can handle it. God won't let me be more tempted than what I'm able to bear. I understand that, but that's not what we're talking about.
Well, he always gives a way out.
Well, he does, but I think people, instead of looking for a way out, they're looking for how close can they get.
Oh yeah, that's the wildest thing. It's we look on the National Geographic and you see people that play with the cobras, and they're getting that close, and we're like, these people are idiots, and it's just like, what are they doing? And it never fails that at least one of them, I mean, you hear about it in the news from time to time, end up getting bit by a snake. And I hate to sound callous, but sometimes I want to say, you play dumb games, you win dumb prizes.
Right.
And we have people today that want to get so close to something that separates us from God, that's so worse than a venomous snake. And it's mind-boggling. It's like, why would you want to get that close? Why would you want to get that close to it? It's like, we're commanded to sing, and when we sing in our worship assemblies, it's to teach and admonish. And you got some people that love instrumental music, and they're like, well, we could like in services and say, well, it's not an instrument, so it's okay. I grew up when I was a teenager, went to some youth rallies that were a little left of center. And I remember the kids all clapping during the songs. And I remember up on the front row, one of the boys started hitting the pew and making a noise that sounded like a drum. And it was interesting. It was at that moment that they stopped everybody from singing and said, we don't need to be hitting the pews while we're singing. And it was like, how can you miss this? How is the clapping okay, but banging it up against a pew isn't? How is this not lost on you? So we end up finding that people want to get as close as they can to something they're not supposed to do so they can get what they want. And so you see that we're to sing, we're to teach and admonish. And the people that want to have the entertainment, want to have the instruments, want to add the and all the claps and things like that, and try to justify it. And there is no justifying it. When we sing, we're to teach and admonish one another, period. And you can't admonish one another if you're clapping, unless you're clapping in Morse code. And I've never heard of that, and I still wouldn't recommend it.
Well, but that's a great application in for the modern church. I doubt, non-Christians would understand this necessarily. But I will say this. Most guys can understand the temptation, which is sexual in nature.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We understand not to be in the same room with another woman who's not our wife alone. We can look at Joseph and we can see, even if he did the right thing, he still was caught in a situation that looked bad.
Oh, yeah.
And we can take some wisdom from that and say, hey, I don't ever want to be put in that kind of situation.
I got a little side excursion to think about that is, you think about hunting and you hear about guys going out hunting and they put deer urine on their boots and they get the scent of a doe on them somehow. I don't hunt, but then they go in the woods and you got a deer that's looking to mate, and then it comes to find them and then it gets shot. And it makes me think, it's like, what if aliens came to Earth, the easiest way to hunt men is to have a woman, hey there, fella, come on over this way. Okay, where are you? I can't find you. And then end up getting shot. Because men are, we're dumb creatures when it comes to women. And what the proverbial writer is saying is, stay away. Don't allow yourself to be put in a situation to be tempted. I mean, we see that here, that it's a young man lacking sense. So, we need to put in our heart, like he had said
earlier.
It's
kind of, and since this is so general, it's almost as if that there are some married women who know there's young men out there that mm-hmm. would fall for the temptation have any sense, and that makes them good prey. That makes the Bible says in 1 Corinthians 10:12, we need to remember, if we think that we're standing, we need to take heed lest we fall.
Oh yeah,
we just need to understand how vulnerable we can be and how that can change in just a moment. The warning should be observed in every walk of life. As you were mentioning a moment ago, you made application instrumental music. Just the subtle changes, and you know, we're not jumping off the track to get into instrumental music, but we're trying to do things that we think would be scriptural, not but a little edgy, and yeah. We're not really thinking about it. And then next thing you know, we're off. Off in the deep end somewhere, the drift has pulled us out to away from the shore.
Yeah, we don't need to bind our traditions, but we also don't need to push the envelope of Christianity either. We've been given clear instruction on what to do, and we do that to the best of our ability, and we should be excited to do that because that's what God has commanded. Going with what you've talked about is she's setting up these young men to fail. Look in verses 10 to 20. Look at what she does to get him to come to her house. And behold, the woman meets him dressed as a prostitute, wily of heart. She is loud and wayward. Her feet do not stay at home. Now is the street, now in the market, and at every corner she lies in wait. She seizes him and kisses him, and with bold face she says to him, I had to offer sacrifices, and today I've paid my vows. So now I've come out to meet you, to seek you eagerly, and I've found you, and I've spread my couch with coverings, colored linens from Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love till morning. Let us delight ourselves with love, for my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He took a bag of money with him. At full moon, he will come home. So she's not only telling this young man, dressed in a way that's going to seduce him, she's going all out. She's like, and this is the type of bedding I've got, and this is what it's going to smell like, and this is how it's safe.
Yeah, you know, she's really painting the picture for him of how enticing that will be. And you know, enticement simply means to attract by offering hope of a reward or pleasure, to tempt, to allure. It's like the synonym of lure, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, a fisherman uses
You said synonym, bait. And we talk about cinnamon, so it got me used for a second. A fisherman uses bait. I'm sorry, that tickled me for some reason.
Well, anyway, you know that's what a lure does, is it's just designed to distract the fish, and the next thing you know, he's got a hook in his mouth. And so this second scene appears a married woman, who's dressed like a prostitute, who comes out to meet this simpleton, and she conceals her true feelings while she seeks only to satisfy her evil passions. And so she begins to entice this simpleton with words and promises and mental pictures and perfumes, just as prostitutes or even evil women do today. You know?
And it's that hunting analogy that I used earlier. Is, I mean, you got hunters that cover themselves and all kind of stuff to trick the bucks to come out. And then they get shot. And here we've got this woman using all the tricks to lure these young men. And we see in verse 21 to 23, it lays it out. With much seductive speech, she persuades him. With her smooth talk, she compels him. All at once, he follows her. As an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a stag is caught fast, till an arrow pierces its liver. As a bird rushes into a snare, he does not know that it will cost him his life. So it's you got a deer or a buck that's smelling what he thinks is a doe, and he's ready to go find a girlfriend doe and get shot. And here you have a young man who's being pursued by this woman. Little does he know, it could kill him.
Mm-hmm. You know what? One thing that caught my mind back in the last reading was the fact that she said, I had to offer sacrifices, and today I've paid my vows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's taken care of her religious obligations.
Mm-hmm.
She's not spiritually minded at all, but she is religious.
How often do we see that today?
And, that's just the hypocrisy of a lot of religionists, and even some in the church, and you just think, well, I've done the five acts of worship, I've given to the Lord, I feel like, I could play and do what I want to do and fulfill my self-gratifications and just do what I want to, but I'm religious, I'll show up to the assembly on Sunday.
You know, we got to remember that God wants full custody. He doesn't want weekend visitations.
Well, anyway, I thought about that as I was thinking about you know, this snare of immorality, because here we're told that by her eloquent speech, this licentious woman caused this simpleton to yield to her will. She had total control over this guy's mind. That's what wound up happening. And he consented to her solicitations and followed her lead. When you looked at verses number 22 and 23, it says that once he follows her, as an ox goes to the slaughter, or a stag is caught fast till an arrow pierces his liver, as a bird rushes into a snare, he does not know that it will cost him his life. He has no idea. And so, you know, it's a big trap. And so verses 22 and 23 state that not only did he follow her lead, but he went straight away or suddenly like an animal being led to a slaughter, as a simpleton who lacks understanding, you know, one who's putting his prudent judgment behind him and using his fleshly desires. And anyway, it brings him to spiritual ruin.
If he had the word of God, the statutes on his heart, like a tablet, as said earlier,
he would have avoided the area to begin with.
Avoided it all the way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we see the end of it. Did you read verses 24 to 27?
No, I hadn't gotten there yet. I just was just thinking about, you know, how Satan can trap us and ensnare us in doing evil when we throw out all of our discretion and all of our godly judgment.
All right. So we see verse 24, "And now, O sons, listen to me and be attentive to thy words of my mouth. Let not your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths, for many a victim has she laid low. And all her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is in the way of Sheol, going down to the chambers of death." So what he's saying is, you know what? You think you're going to be the only one. You're not the only one. She has pursued many young men like you. And she has said things like this to many young men like you. So avoid her at all costs. Follow God instead. So that's
something that's really interesting to me. He says, "For many a victim she has laid low, and all her slain are a mighty throng." I mean, that says that this person has done this before. She's been guilty of immorality before, and she has ruined a lot of men's lives. Why is it that all these men have ruined their lives, but she hadn't ruined hers? I mean, she has, but she seems to still be continuing and doing what she's doing. Under the law, wouldn't she have to be stoned?
You'd think.
Anyway, it sounds like there's a lot more people that don't get caught.
Yep,
in the
that's
act
what I was
adultery.
About to say. Yeah. That's the kicker. So we move on to chapter 8. The title is "The Blessings of Wisdom." And what we see is, "Does not wisdom call? Does not understanding raise her voice on the heights beside the way? At the crossroads she takes her stand, beside the gate in front of the town, at the entrance of the portal she cries aloud, 'To you, O men, I call, and my call is on the children of man. O simple ones, learn prudence. O fools, learn sense. Hear, for I will speak noble things, and from my lips will come what is right. For my mouth will utter truth. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are righteous. There is nothing twisted or crooked in them. They are all straight to him who understands, and right to those who find knowledge. Take my instruction instead of silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than jewels, and all that you may desire cannot compare with her." So what we end up seeing is, we need to chase wisdom. There have been young men that I've known since I've been in ministry, and they date the wrong type of girls. And it comes to the same conclusion. They're like, you know, she just doesn't want to be godly. And I said, she didn't want to be godly to start with. I said, you're casting your lure in the wrong pond. I said, what, you're wanting to chase women right now? I said, you're young. I mean, odds are you're not going to find your wife. Don't let your focus be on women right now. Let your focus be on wisdom, gaining knowledge, seeking truth, spending time with wise brethren.
What fun is that, though?
I know. What fun is it? But it's easy to read. It's hard to apply.
Right. Well, okay. Tell me more.
All right. So, verse 12, I wisdom dwell with prudence, and I find knowledge and discretion. The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil. Pride and arrogance in the way of evil and perverted speech I hate. I have counsel and sound wisdom. I have insight. I have strength. By my king's reign and ruler's decree, what is just. By me princes rule and nobles, all who govern justly. I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently find me. Riches and honor are with me, enduring wealth and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, even fine gold, and my yield than choice silver. I will walk in the way of righteousness, in the paths of justice, granting an inheritance to those who love me and filling their treasuries. We see the personification of wisdom here, about the benefits that we find in seeking wisdom and the downfall of those who don't seek wisdom.
Well, you know, you've got an invitation. Wisdom invites, when you said it, you know, the personification of wisdom, and it's portrayed as a woman who comes forth to cry out with words of understanding. You know, wisdom and knowledge joined together in giving an invitation to all people everywhere. And when you, again, when you look at verse number 2, wisdom takes her position in the open, elevated places of the city where she can be seen and heard by everybody that goes by. She's going to be standing where the roads come together and where people from many different places are going to converge. Mm-hmm. And verse 3 says, what again? What does it say? How does it read in your
verse
Bible?
Verse 3, beside the gates in front of the town, at the entrance of the portal, she cries aloud.
And at the coming in the gate at the doors is how the King James puts it. But you know, she just, you know, this personification of wisdom, lifting up her voice in the busy places of the city. You know, her invitation is like the gospel of Christ. It's for all.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just for a certain group of people. God's wisdom is for all men everywhere. And up to this point, the writer has told us about wisdom and understanding. But now it says they begin to speak out for themselves. And this carries us through verse number 10. Wisdom cries out for all men to hear the message.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, wisdom, I mean, God has given us so much pertaining to His Word so that we can be wise. And it is up to us to navigate those roads, to spend time, to learn, to glean.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be better off for doing it. So it's like when I talk to those young guys, like, hey, you know, you need to seek wisdom. It's easy to say it, but it's hard to apply it. When, I mean, so it's one of those things, we know what we need to do. It's just a matter of doing it. Verse 22, the Lord possessed me at the beginning of His work, the first of His acts of old. Ages ago I set up. At the first, before the beginning of the earth, when there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no springs abounding with water, before the mountains had been shaped, before the hills, I was brought forth. Before He had made the earth from its fields, or the first of the dust of the world. When He established the heavens, I was there. When He drew a circle on the face of the deep, when He made firm the skies above, when He established the fountains of the deep, when He assigned to the sea its limit, so that the waters might not transgress His command, when He marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside Him like a master workman, and I was daily His delight, rejoicing before Him always, rejoicing in His inhabited word, and delighting in the children of man.
Well, so in this, you see there's more creation talk.
Oh, yeah.
And in starting with verse number 22, she's presented herself to men as great and good and true. And at this point, a controversy has raged through the years as to whether these words refer to an actual heavenly being, or, you know, which some people identify as Christ,
mm-hmm.
or is wisdom still a personification? And I kind of go with the latter. I believe that we are talking about personification, and
right.
The point of personification is to make it seem so real that it looks like it's talking about a person.
Right, and it does it. Mm-hmm. It really does it. So, I mean, we see all of these different types of things that we're able to... I mean, just... I love how the writer pinned all of this, talking about wisdom and where wisdom came from. Wisdom has been around since the beginning.
Yeah, before the mountains came into being.
Before the mountains came into being,
yeah.
And God was wanting to share that. And in verse 32, and now, O sons, listen to me. Blessed are those who keep my ways. Hear instruction and be wise, and do not neglect it. Blessed is the one who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting beside my doors. For whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who fails to find me injures himself. All who hate me love death. And I think that
kind of goes along with your statement at the beginning. You know, if you want to live a short life, you know, read the Proverbs and don't do what it says.
Yeah, absolutely. We read the Bible, and it's not only reading it, knowing it, it's applying it. And there are a lot of people that we could find that know their Bible, but they sure don't act on it.
Mm-hmm.
And on the day of judgment, you're going to find that God's like, why didn't you act on it? If you knew what it said, why didn't you do it? So we see the final admonition here, verses 35 and 36, for whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord, but he who fails to find me injures himself. All who hate me love death. So if we want to be with God, we're going to have to apply wisdom.
Yeah.
Yet if we want to spend our eternity apart from God, we're going to do the opposite.
Ezekiel 18:4, the soul that sins it shall die. And sin is doing the opposite. You know, it's the unwise thing to do. It's to deviate from the right way. It's to miss the mark. It's to shun wisdom. And those that don't listen to wisdom are those that this Bible says love death. They love death. And I don't love death.
Nope.
But at the same time, if I'm not going to listen to the wisdom of God, then it's kind of like our children. When we tell our children, hey, look, you know, if you don't want to get a spanking, you're going to do what I say.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they don't do what you say, and you tell them, well, you must want a spanking. They say, no, we don't want a spanking. You said, well, you didn't do what I said, so you must want a spanking.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if we don't do what God's wisdom says to do, if we don't take His wisdom and make it our own, we're going to love death.
Oh, yeah. You rarely find somebody in the church that would say, you know what, I don't care about God or what God would want me to do. But their actions say that. And it's like, you know, the same example with our kids is our kids will say, I love you. And it's like, how can you tell me you love me? And then you don't do things that, you know, make me happy. You don't do what I ask you to do. I mean, your actions don't coincide with what you say. And here's what we find is their actions
mm-hmm.
will injure themselves, and they're not heeding to wisdom.
You know, we can sin against wisdom
mm-hmm.
as in a personified way,
right?
By not desiring her, by not seeking her, by not listening to her, and then by not following her instructions.
Yeah,
very simple.
Very simple. I mean, we look at this as. We have been given the guidebook. We've been given the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
We can follow the Bible. We can, and that's wisdom right there, is seeing it and doing it. What is it? It's knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit, and wisdom is knowing not to put it in a salad, or not to put it in a smoothie, something like that. So
I never heard that
it's
before.
It's like knowledge is knowing what God would have us do, and wisdom is applying it.
Yeah.
What do you think, Bensie? Do you think this was good? Did you have fun today? Yes?
Well, you're a good boy, Vince.
Yeah, you were a good boy.
This boy hadn't made a peep the whole time. He's just been mesmerized by watching his daddy talk.
There it is. He knocked some stuff off the table, but that's okay. He's a little boy.
You know what? I like little noises in the background when we've got other people with us. It kind of lets us know we're human. It's kind of like creating a home environment.
There it
is. On the radio show, I tell you what. Well, man, I tell you what, I've enjoyed our discussion today in Proverbs. Let's do this again.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much for tuning in today. I hope this lesson was a benefit for you. I'm J.J. Hendricks.
Chris Grota here.
And remember,
we're proud of you. God bless.